Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, Baylor is now up to six commits for the 2024 class. And the last two that came in both have Baylor connections. Let's start out with Mason Dossett.
It was a week of lose one, add one. And I will say to you that I think that, you know, they got the bad news on Monday when Brendan Booker, the linebacker from DeSoto, decommitted and then hours later flipped to Stanford. And that's a big loss for their defensive side of recruiting. Big linebacker, aggressive. But when you are flipping to Stanford with its academic prestige to it, you kind of go, yeah, I kind of get that. And so it's kind of hard to get really mad. Like if he was to flip to TCU, then people would go, what? You know, that sort of thing. But Stanford, it's like, You just kind of go, got it, understand. But yes, you're right. With the legacy of Mason Dossett coming on board and announcing his commitment, he flipped from Purdue to Baylor on Tuesday. Great ad for them, from at least from what they hope will be help in the secondary. He's viewed as a safety there. He obviously has had a lot of experience on both sides of the ball, primarily on the offensive side, where he was the number two wide receiver for this team last year, and probably will be in the same role again. But I would suspect that his defensive role will increase because of what Baylor projects him to be in their defense in the secondary. Of course, we won't know anything about Mason until, what, maybe 2025, maybe 2026 or something along those lines. But that's neither here nor there. And the other thing is that Baylor has developed a pretty good pipeline now, or is starting to develop a pretty good pipeline in Fort Bend Ridgepoint, because of the fact that, you know, DK Kalu, the defensive tackle, just arrived on campus, 2023 signee. So he's in the fold. And I know in talking to DK in weeks past or months past about Mason's, you know, a passion to go to Baylor, or he'd been working on it. Now, Mason has said to me that he was, you know, it's always been a dream for him to go to Baylor. Kind of crazy, because you were just committed to Purdue for 6 weeks and then you flip. But I think in some cases you would look at the Purdue commitment and say, okay, that's a placeholder commitment in case Baylor comes along. I would suspect that something happened on the Baylor side where perhaps slots opened up or scholarships opened up. You know, we talked about, okay, so let's look about it from this way. You know, we had the news that Jaron Woods, the defensive lineman from LaGrange, left campus, packed his bags, left. Disappointing, of course, but, you know, he suffered that devastating leg injury in the season opener for 2022, never came back, and I think his heart wasn't in it. And God bless him. If he feels like his heart's not in it, then go do something else. You know, if you don't want to play, if you're done playing football, then don't do it if you don't enjoy it. And so my point is that it opens up a scholarship for Baylor. Now, they only have six commitments with this class, but it also kind of turns into like a numbers thing. How can we balance out the number of safeties or number of defensive backs that we want to get? How many defensive linemen do we want to get? That sort of thing. So maybe, and then of course, what are we going to do with the portal in 2020 for the 2024 roster? So all those things come into play. And maybe Baylor was kind of, you know, they wanted him, of course, because Mason's dad played for Baylor in the late 90s and early 2000, or I guess it was 97 to 2000. And he played professionally. And I think maybe there is that, do I want to do this, or I want to follow dad's footsteps because he played here, or do I want to carve my own path? That's always kind of a tricky situation for any player whose dad was in athletics at a particular school. You know,
Yeah, because at that age, you're trying to develop your own personality. You don't, I don't know if you remember, but I know when I was a teenager, it got really old saying, oh, you're Bob Cook's boy, you know, and no, I'm Steve Cook. You know, I mean, I am his son, but you want to be your own person, and that can be a big challenge.
Sure, and I think that's kind of the thing that kids who are at, or whatever walk of life it is, but in this case, football, is how do I carve my own path? You know, he had gotten a lot of, you know, quality offers, Georgia Tech, Arizona, Purdue among those that were pursuing him. So he obviously is a Division I P5 type of player. I think the question was going to be is, you know, the whole Baylor thing. Again, if he told me that, you know, playing for Baylor was a dream of his. So I say by those very words, and I'll take him at his word, that he wasn't bothered by the fact that his dad played there. He had probably been to so many Baylor games in his lifetime, you know, when his dad was going back there just to watch them play. And when he was a kiddo, that he probably knows that campus like the back of his hand. He's actually going to be taking his official visit this coming weekend with about four or five others. And we'll have a preview on the official visitors late Thursday, early Friday for that. But anyway, and then of course the Baylor camp, first Baylor camp is this coming Friday or this coming Saturday as well. But I will say that if he was comfortable with that premise of, I'm not bothered by the fact that my dad played here 20 some odd years before, I can handle it, I can deal with it, I can play through it, and I'm my own person or whatever. And as long as you're comfortable with that, now you're not going to really know until you actually get on campus and start going through the rigmarole of the football experience on this. But he is a playmaker, guy who, you know, averaged about 13 yards a catch, pretty solid reception average yards per catch, I should say, total. And the fact that in the limited snaps that I saw, or the limited amount of numbers that I saw from him on the defensive side, he did come up with an interception. And that's one thing that I think that Matthew Pollage is trying to get back with this defense in future years. Obviously, he hopes that it'll be started this year, that you want safeties to be playmakers. Think about the number of interceptions that Baylor had in that championship season. What was it, well over 20 or something like that? Last year's team had 13. By the way, do you know how many? I'll get to that in a second. But you just need safeties that can be playmakers. And the reason why, look at Al Walcott, safety, has the game defining pick six against Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. Things like that. JT Woods, his record speaks for itself. It's Jalen Petrie. What he did his last 2 years at Baylor spoke for itself. That's what they want to try and get, and I think they're hoping that Mason can evolve into that. And if he does, then they're right back where they started from. I think what people should not do is try and compare Dossett to a Woods or to a Petrie or anybody else, or Al Walcott or anybody else, because to kind of use your point about the legacy thing, I'm not Martin Dossett, I'm Mason Dossett. And that's who I want to be. And I want to be the best Mason Dossett that I can be. Now, you can say, well, he does do some things that are similar to that. But it's almost like, keep in mind, the story of JT Woods when JT got out there is that he wasn't even a starter for his team and for his high school team. And he emerged into turning himself into a really good player to where he was drafted by the LA Chargers in the draft a couple of years ago. So those are things that are fun to watch. Now, just one more point on Booker. Obviously, he's not going to take his official visit to Baylor this coming weekend, which was scheduled for. And I was always kind of worried about the strength of his commitment to Baylor. You can kind of look at it similar to what Dawson did between Purdue and Baylor. Baylor's my placeholder, but if this school comes along and says, we really want you, which in this case appeared to be Stanford, he's gone. And that's what happens in recruiting a lot, where kids will commit to a school because they want to make sure they at least have a spot. It's kind of like your safety school, or people like to call certain schools their safety school or whatever, but that's kind of what this is in some respects. And the schools kind of get that. They know that you have your eye on somebody else potentially. And when that starts to grow stronger and stronger and stronger, then you kind of know where they're on top of it. They know all the backwoods story. And when they get caught and when they see this happen, they're like, he's gone. And so that was my concern about Booker was, are they really going to be able to hang on to him? And of course they did not.
One of the things before we move on from Dossett to our next one, just something that I noticed is he played offense and defense. Now he's listed as an athlete by Rivals, but Everything that I'm hearing is that they're looking at him on defense. But he played for a 6A D2 school, all right? And he played both sides of the ball. And that's kind of unusual. Once you get up past, like, 3A, you don't see near as many two-way players anymore. And so I'm just saying that he... The thing about it is, if you play defense and offense, particularly where one where your receiver and the other you're covering a receiver, you understand the way both sides
play. I get that. I think, though, you know, from that standpoint, that my feeling is I don't know how many snaps he actually, how many games he really played in significantly on defense, but he played enough so where Baylor likes him at the safety spot for defense. Now, again, that's kind of the same thing as you look at Graydon Grimes, the tight end from China Spring, Jeff Grimeson, who committed to Baylor on Friday. The thinking with him is that he's going to be a defensive end, even though he's listed as a tight end for Rivals. And so if that's the case, you know, but what Graydon told me was that, well, I'm going to come in there and they're looking at me at defensive end to start, but that could change. And so, and I think that's kind of going to be the case, I think, with Mason. I think the idea is start him off at safety, but you can obviously push him to a different position. If you feel like you're strong at safety, you need a possession receiver, you know, that sort of thing. Well, I guess we'll just kind of have to let the story play itself out. Again, who knows how this is all going to play out, because number one, his commitment is 24 hours old as of our recording of this podcast. And there's a whole summer camp or summer in front of him, as well as a 2023 football season to be played. And then we'll see where this all goes, because things can change and all that stuff.
Now, a couple of things on Graydon Grimes. Number one, he's coming off a state championship. China Springs turning into quite a little championship factory. But second thing is that, like, he doesn't really have, you notice Baylor's is only P5 offer, but I have to wonder how many people said, oh, yeah, right, I think dad coaches at Baylor. Like, you know, what's the point in making
an
offer?
I get it, but I mean, it's a case where, you know, and people will say, you know, if you looked at his offer list, not that big of a deal there. You know, you have the Abilene Christians of the world in there, and that sort of thing. And so is this going to be another case of the small school, big-time player? Will he have an impact, and will he impact the room once he gets to Baylor? Who knows? That's up to him, and that's up to how he develops and how he adjusts to the Division I P5 game. You know, that sort of, it's a huge jump. I mean, it's already a big enough jump when you're going from 6A to 5A ball, but when you're going from 3A, as good as China Spring is, and China Spring can knock off a ton of 4A and 5A schools, just to be clear about that. But that doesn't mean, but when you, it's your competition level that you're facing week in and week out that can probably make the difference. And again, he's going to have to make a big adjustment on that. Now, to his benefit, he's going to start on the defensive side, like I mentioned, at defensive end. And Baylor really needs help there. I mean, they got they've got some defensive line help from the two kids that came through the portal. You know, and Tevin Mayall, and as well as Byron Vaughns, but Vaughns is gone after this year, and they're going to lose a couple more. They're going to lose T.J. Franklin, and they're going to lose Gabe Hall. So you look at those three losses right there, and then there's some heavy, heavy things that they've got to replace on that. Now, in Graydon's case, don't expect him to be an instant contributor in 2024. Because that would be a disservice to him. But what I'm saying is that this is where Baylor needs to build the depth and really address that defensive front because of what they're going to be losing after this 2023 season.
Yeah, but he also, at 6'6 and 230, he could probably pack on about another 15 pounds of muscle easy.
Maybe 30, maybe 35, maybe 35. I mean, I could see him going to 270, maybe even 275, as long as that, for defensive end, it's obviously going to be about that first step. If you can beat the tackle off the snap, or that tight end who's trying to chip you off the snap, it's all going to come down to how well you can address that and how well you can beat that. And I think that's going to be one of the things that once Graydon arrives at Baylor, And he's going to be taking his official visit, I think it's the 16th. I think it's next week. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when he does that, though, it's going to be a case where how does his first step off the defensive line move? But again, as he told me, and as I have in the recommitment story, is, okay, if we're doing this, then if we're doing this, and let's make sure this is right. If it's not going to work, then we can easily shift him back to tight end. Now, I will tell people mm-hmm. about his role as a tight end at China Spring, that it really wasn't a pass-catching kind of situation for him. He was more of a blocker, you know, goal line packages, short yardage packages kind of thing, you know, like that extra guy to bring in there if they were trying to get fourth and goal at the one, or trying to pick up fourth and one at the opponent's 35, or third and two at their own 33, and there was a strict off-tackle dive play, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I think that would be mm-hmm. his role at Baylor if he switched back to tight end. Again, just some fearless forecasting, but that could be a way to view it.
Yeah, and I think that might be another reason why he's not garnered a whole bunch of offers, is Baylor's one of the few schools that really seems to go after tight ends. They seem to be kind of a lost position to a lot of schools.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree with that. So, but I mean, look, they're starting to pick it up on the recruiting end, just like you thought it would. I would remind people, don't forget to check out the official visit site or thread that I've posted, so you can get the latest on this. We've already made the moves, of course, with Grimes when he's taking his OB. Same thing with Mason Dawson. We took Brendan Booker out of it, so everything is up to date as far as we know. And we'll try and check and see if anybody else is coming in this coming weekend for that first weekend.
Okay, and let's move on to basketball. Now, the guys who were there last year, Adam Flagler, he is officially out of here. And mm-hmm. Jalen Bridges withdrew from the draft, but they'd like him back, but he's not really given signs like he wants to re-enter the old relationship.
Yeah, I think the update for that is that there obviously Baylor would like him to come back. There seems to be some hope that he will return, but there's just kind of like this day-to-day process of looking at his situation with these Australian teams in the next level market. That's a report that came out on Draft Express, which works with ESPN. I think that's going to be a case where he's going to probably take it all the way down to the end, and if Baylor gets him back, great. I mean, the good thing, you know, that would be a great thing for Baylor because they need him. Now they really need him because the two guys that they were going after, Grant Nelson, the 6'11 center from North Dakota State, and Olivier Kumwa, the 6'8 power forward from Tennessee, are off the market, or at least they're off the market for Baylor. Kumwa on Monday, or I should say on Wednesday, committed to Michigan after the Wolverines jumped back in. And then it came out on Tuesday that Nelson was out, you know, had dropped Baylor from consideration, and apparently it was down to both Alabama and Arkansas for his services. And those are two schools that really need help in the post. Well, heck, Baylor needs help in the post. And so where I'm going with this is that, okay, they knew they weren't getting Nelson, which hurt, because Baylor's really exposed in the block. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they lost him, I think they felt like they were hoping that if they get Kumwa, even though he's 6'8", but a power forward, but experienced, he would have had 1 year remaining, so he only would have been here for just 23, 24. But if they got him, at least they have some sort of enforcer, not a rim protector, but a guy that could get in and mix it up around the basket. And now they really don't, because if Bridges comes back, and again, I think he will once he kind of gets the reality check, because as I said last week in the whole Bridges Flagler story, and of course Ray J. Dennis will talk about him here in a second. But as I said about Bridges was the fact that he wasn't going to get drafted. He knew this. Okay. Now all those guys had until May 31st to declare if they were going to stay in or pull out of the draft. He knew that he wasn't going to get drafted. And I already knew that the day that he announced, you know. But anyway, and if he goes to Australia, the question is the money angle. And then the Australian teams, whatever offers that he could be fielding right now, would say, well, if you get hurt, you're money will drop exponentially or whatever. Always, that's always going to be a factor when it comes to negotiating a pro contract, whether it's overseas or in the States. And if you want to, if you're one of those types of players, but I think Jalen's game needs more development. Look, he left West Virginia to come to Baylor because he needed to get better. He was averaging, I think it was 8-4 with the Mountaineers his sophomore year. And he was just okay, nothing great. And remember, he got off to the slow start for Baylor this season. You know, he would dial it up against, you know, the guaranteed games. And then he kind of went, and then he kind of disappeared in the games of note, like UCLA, Virginia, that sort of thing. But to his credit, he really picked it up in the Big 12 season. I think he maybe had, off the top of my head, maybe three games where he was not in double figures. And then he had the career high game of 28 points against Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament. So he got better. He developed. He got better than what he was at West Virginia, which is why you hope you leave one place to go to another. But he needs more time to develop so that if he's going to be, and I don't think he's going to get drafted next year. I'll just put it to you front, unless he absolutely just explodes this year and becomes a go-to player on this team, which I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the go-to players for this team next year are going to be like Jacoby Walter, Miro Little, and of course now RJ Dennis. Those are going to be your go-to players, and Jalen's going to be a compliment. But if you're Jalen, you've got to look at your game and say, is it pro-ready regardless of where it is? My answer is no. It's getting better, but no.
Yeah, and what you mentioned about when they talk about, well, if you get injured, this will happen and this will happen. I remember this old thing. They were talking about the battleship Bismarck during World War II. Don't worry, there is a point to this. But
you're not going to sing the Johnny Horton song, are you?
No. But the thing was that they spent so much money on the ship that they were afraid to put it out because they didn't want it to get destroyed. And the thing is, if something is too valuable to put out into the battle, then it's worthless. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, you're going to play, you can blow your knee out in a pickup game. You can blow your knee out during practice. It can happen any point in time. Now, you don't take stupid chances, but at a certain point in time, you got to put your body out there and take a risk.
Right. And three years ago, I would have said that's a hard thing to walk away with. But as Baylor is trying to address its NIL situation, mm-hmm. on both the basketball and football sides, and I think Scott Drew gets it and knows he's got to get it, because if Scott's going to get, you know, really Baylor back in the race and stay competitive in that, so that Baylor still can compete for Big 12 championships and make deep runs in the tournament. Mm-hmm. The Baylor NIL for basketball has got to get going. And I think there are some progress signs there. I'm sure it helped in terms of securing Jaden Nunn. Probably made a big difference in getting RJ Dennis. Mm-hmm. I think Adam Flagler declaring staying in the draft kind of sealed Dennis's commitment, because you can't tell me those dots don't connect. Flagler stays in the draft one day, Dennis commits the next day. Okay, so here you are.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, my point is with NIL, mm-hmm. so like if Bridges were to blow out his knee at Baylor, he's still getting money from his NIL contract, whatever that is.
Yeah. Yeah, now here's one of the other things, though. Did you see what Lane Kiffin said about what's happening? And he was referring to football, but it's true for basketball. He said that it is becoming less and less about recruiting, and it's becoming more and more transactional.
Yes.
And he thinks that there's a possibility that, like, there's a lot of high school coaches that could end up coaching in college now because they're really good X's and O's guys, but they weren't great recruiters. Well, now, if it's just about negotiating a contract, it's not so much about recruiting.
Right. I would say this. I think Lane's on to something. I would agree with him to this point, because you have now, let's look at it this way. The NIL and recruiting seasons are running hand in hand. And why does Baylor's 2024 class look so, they're 43rd, by the way, mm-hmm. in the rivals team's rankings. And again, they only have six. So all these rankings at this time of year are so I don't put a lot of stock in them just because some schools have 17, others have 4, mm-hmm. others have 12, Baylor has 6.
Yeah.
So you really can't measure it. You can't, but we were making a big deal about it at this time last year when Baylor was right around 16, mm-hmm. you know, number 16 in the polls, even though I cautioned that all could change. And I think Baylor finished, what, around 28 or whatever it was last year, 30 or something like mm-hmm. that. And so, but at 43, you're going this, but this is the year, I think, where the NIL has really started to assert itself and being a player and how the recruiting circuit goes. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Where the money's going to make a difference. Look, the money is a huge factor when it comes to your quarterbacks. That's why Baylor was never going to get, you know, if Baylor's NIL program was up to speed like it was at other locations, I think they would have had a better chance at getting Deuce Adams, the quarterback from New Braunfels Canyon, who's now at Austin Vandergrift and committed to Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's the same thing with Walker White, the Little Rock quarterback that committed to Auburn. Auburn. And so you look at that, but the NIL trickle-down theory for all of your players is a big deal. I mean, Baylor's got a bunch of 3 stars, 5'5", 5'6", maybe a 5'7", which you could say, well, that's kind of typically what Baylor recruits. And they are. It really is.
Yeah, but they got 5 3-stars and 1 4-star.
Yeah.
So
and so... So you look at that, that's right, because Brock Jackson got moved to a 4-star, mm-hmm. the linebacker out of Lumberton. Okay. But what I'm saying to you, though, is that Baylor has to, I don't know if the NIL efforts for Baylor for the 2024 class are too late. Personally, I think they're so well behind on raising money for the NIL for 2024, they may not have a great class. They could probably save themselves if a couple of kids decommit because NIL deals go sour or whatever the case may be, and a kid backs off his pledge and wants to come back to Texas or stay in Texas rather than go somewhere else. I could see those kind of scenarios unfolding. But what I've said before is you can be upset about what Baylor is doing for the NIL class for 2024 on the football side, but don't worry about that. Just make sure that you're ready to go for 2025. And I think the numbers that I've heard tossed around is about, you know, $2.5 million for football, $2.0 million for basketball. Someone asked on the board about why is it easier for basketball to get these players versus football. And my answer was simple. Smaller roster to deal with. Mm-hmm. You can pull the money faster for basketball players. Football, you've got 85 scholarships. So then how do you get, so you need a real grassroots campaign to get your football going. And I think that's where Baylor is. It's still in its ramp up time. And people have heard me say this ad nauseum to them. They want to say, shut up, Kevin. But it's, you know, Baylor did not need the NCAA green light back in January to move forward with NIL. And that's really what hurt them here and what has been hurting them in the last several months.
Okay. Kevin, you ready to close it out for us?
Yes. Okay. So obviously we'll have coverage of Baylor's recruiting class. Their official visits for this coming Friday. We'll have that up there for on the site. A little bit of coverage of the camps. Not a lot because I'm actually going to be out of town. I got to drive out to Tuscaloosa to help my Crimson Tide get her big stuff loaded into a U-Haul van and bring it back. That get that all together over the weekend. But at the same time, we'll get this all together and we'll keep you totally covered. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.